I'm Zach, your host of the Auxoro podcast, the voice of music artists, and this week I sit down with the absolute legend Wyclef Jean. Now, Wyclef Jean has been making music for longer than I've been alive, which is not that long by most people's standards. I'm 24 years old, but just to think that Wyclef has been writing music, battle rapping, making instrumentals, playing guitar, coming up with the Fugees before I was even born, to me is crazy to think about. I spoke with Wyclef in the dressing room of the Wellmont Theater in New Jersey before the first stop on the Carnival Tour, which is for his most recent album. Now, Wyclef, or Clef as most people in his life call him, he was born into complete poverty in Haiti. He didn't have shit growing up, and he moved from Haiti to the Marlboro Projects in Coney Island when he was 9 years old. And the Wellmont Theater, the venue that we spoke at, is actually not too far away from where he went to high school and where he's living right now. I'm a white kid that grew up in a well-off family in the suburbs of Long Island, New York, so I don't know a whole lot about what Wyclef went through when he was growing up in shitty situations in Haiti, moved to the projects, used music as a way to escape what he was going through. The only thing I could do was gather as much information I could about him, read his book, listen to his music, and try to gain an understanding of where Clef was coming from without actually experiencing. Sitting across from Clef face to face in the dressing room before the show, in the midst of our actual conversation, there were these hard as fuck, intense, passionate moments where he describes music as survival. For him, music was and is still a way to survive. He still carries that chip on his shoulder that everything he's built, the platform he's built, every song he's released, everything he's done can be taken away from him at any moment. And he carries himself like that. I hope this conversation paints a more detailed picture of who Wyclef is and gives you a deeper perspective on who he is, not only as a music artist, but as a person. And if you listen to the end, he spits some fucking bars. He absolutely goes in. I knew I was going to ask him to freestyle at some point during the podcast because I had heard that he always keeps 16 bars on him regardless. Like if someone battle raps him, he comes from a background of battle rap back in the day, he always has 16 bars on him ready to go. So as soon as the podcast ends, the conversation part, he goes right in and starts spitting, and you're definitely not going to want to miss that. I hope you enjoy this conversation, and I hope you never battle rap Wyclef Jean, because you're going to fucking lose.
So how are you doing today, Clef?
Man, I feel so surreal right now. It's crazy because I'm seeing like a lot of my friends up here, you dig?
Mm-hmm.
Like coming back to Jersey is so crazy for me. Like
that's
kicking
the first
it
stop
off
on tour.
Yeah, but it's crazy like to come back home. Like we in Jersey, it's like 20 some years later. It's like the land of Akon, you know, the Fugees, Refugees, Eminem, the Outsiders, you know, a lot of memories. And I see a lot of my friends like that I came up with. So it's nuts, man, to be back here and to kick off the Carnival Tour like out here. It's really overwhelming for me because, you know, I got crew coming from Newark, Irvington.
Got people coming from all over.
You feel me?
All
sold
local
up heavy, man.
So I like to start out with a quote usually, and I just started listening to your book. I'm listening to the audiobook version, and you started out, you say, "You let the raw spirit of the music guide you until it becomes what it was meant to be." And that really resonated with me because I know back in the day, you're with the Fugees, you're opening up for guys like Biggie and Puff. And you say it's like a different form of hip hop, even though you guys necessarily aren't using the same words, you're telling the same story. You're like different authors telling the same story from the projects. And at the end of the day, like, what is it? What does it feel like to just let the music guide you all the way from back in the early, mid-90s all the way up in today? How did you come to embody that process of just letting the music come to be?
Well, I mean, for me, like, music is survival. It was survival because literally, like, when I say my mom took a gun out my hand and replaced it with a guitar, you know what I mean? I was that kid. Yeah, I was, like, just that kid. So when we say, like, the music guide us, it's like, it's crazy because when you're doing the music and, you know, your fam is hustling, the peer pressure, dog, it's not easy. Like, when you, like, a teen, dog, and you want those new sneakers, you know what I mean? You want those rims on the BM. Yeah, so.
Yeah, it's got to come from somewhere.
So, for me, it's, like, just watching all of that and knowing, like, we did it, right? And we ain't locked up, bro. You know, I got cousins that are dead in prison. And like you said, when you say, like, Biggie, dog, like, I could hear Biggie's voice like it was yesterday. I could hear Tupac's voice like we in the dressing room. You know what I mean? A Big L, you know what I'm saying? Like, Big L, like, I know, like, we was walking through Columbia. First time I saw Big L, I met Nas. You know what I mean? This is, like, early, you know what I mean? Like, we out in Paris, Jay-Z, Damian Dash, they opening up for us, you know what I mean? Fugees, I could hear Damian Dash voice, like, yo, you making too much money, you need to buy a watch, you cheap, you know what I mean? Like, it just, it's like surreal, you know what I'm saying to you? It's dope.
And even before that, I know you have a background in battle rap.
Yeah.
And you would show up to the block and you'd have a guitar and some kids would think, like, yo, there's no way this dude can spit, showing up, and then you're just demolishing kids lyrically, and you learn to come up on the block like that. What was it like getting your feet wet lyrically in that battle rap scene and just coming into your own and just going at it face to face with these people?
I mean, I went to Velsburg High School in Newark, New Jersey. In my era, I was the most lethalest battle rapper to exist. Anybody who's listening to this now know that I used to eat your fucking ass. You already know what I used to do.
Anyone in particular?
Listen, man, everyone knows. Velsburg High School, you already know. Actually, my first name's Nell. And my middle name is Wyclef. My last name is Jean. So in high school, I was like Nelly Nell. I love, like, Melly Mel, and took his whole shit and was like, I'm going to call myself Nelly Nell. Now, you know, for me, like, lyrical jousting was important because it was like, so for example, my man Smack, who started URL, but he had Smack DVDs. Like, you got to understand, like, the sets is real where we from. So when we say, like, Crips, or we say Bloods, you know what I mean? It's not really just, you know what I mean? Or HM, and I could keep going, you know what I mean? When we say Zoes, we not a gang, you know what I mean? Zoes is a movement. Sometimes people take it as a gang. Zoe means bones, like our bones is strong. But at the end of the day, what battle rap allows you to do is you can just express yourself. It's like breakdancing without no one getting shot. No one getting murdered. Like, you could be like, fuck your mom. You know what I mean? And dude just got to eat that because it's battle rapping. You know, once in a while, a fight break down. You know what I mean? I'm also nice with my hands. Dudes know I slap box crazy. In the hood, they call me Kung Fu Joe. Real talk. But battle rap to me was always an escape. And coming from Haiti, I took the English vocabulary very seriously. So I took the whole Shakespeare thing real serious. And then Creole is my first language. And then French.
You speak like five different languages.
Yeah. So Creole, and it's almost like, so I'd be thinking in Creole, then the words come out in English. And then I used to love, like, cause like Shakespeare, and then like when you're using like the these, the thus, you know, like certain words,
art
like
thou.
Art thou. I could do a whole, I used to, you know, I had so much schemes when I would battle rap. I would have like a Shakespearean art thou. I was one of the first kids that was doing like speed rapping, like literally, like when you hear the Migos, you know, Migos, my daughter be like, Dad, you sound like, when you do the speed thing, you sound like Migos. And it's so cute, you know what I'm saying? But all of that stuff, you know what I mean?
And you're just like, I was doing that 20 years before Amiga.
yeah, and I love it, though. I love the fact that we all DNAs of DNAs, you know? And like I said, there's nothing new under the sun, you know? It's almost like when I'm sitting with Thugger and watching them kids, it's like, or Chance the Rapper. It's just a vibe. You know what I mean?
And during this time, I know your dad, I saw in the book, you said he called hip hop bum music.
Yeah.
And your uncle Raymond stood up for you, and he recognized that no matter what your dad thought about music, it was keeping you off the street and keeping you out of trouble, and it was something that you were passionate about. Did it bother you at all, were you pissed off at your dad, or just that he wasn't seeing eye to eye to you? Because I know he was a preacher too,
and yeah,
he came from a whole different scene.
Yo, straight up, man, they came from a, it was nuts. Like, everybody that's a PK, I would say the good thing about the church,
preacher's kid,
yeah, preacher kid,
for all those who don't know the lingo,
yeah, the PKs. But dude, I would say the coolest thing that I learned from the church, because I grew up in a Nazarene church, was the exposure of missionaries.
Mm-hmm.
Because I got to meet people from Kansas City, Nebraska, so different missionaries would come to the church. But my dad was so religious, dog. Let me let you know how religious this dude was. My name is Wycliffe John. He named me after a reformator from the 14th century, who the first translation in English, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, is this dude, Wycliffe John.
Mm-hmm.
My dad is so religious, right, that he bought a funeral home. He made us live in a burnt funeral home. He converted it into a church. And we had church Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I mean, Saturday, Sunday, you might as well call it church club.
Yeah.
So, you know, yo, where you going to the church club, baby? So he couldn't dig hip hop because when you looked out, he called it bum music, right? He called it drug dealer music because he was like, yo, I do not want my kids to fall subject to what's going on in the projects, because they were older, right? Old folks. So when they look at it, all they see is, you know, they see like, you know, the change. They see the block. They see dudes doing the exchange of the hands. But what my dad didn't know, like, my vision was like, yo, I was like, if I could start doing beats for all of these dudes on the block, I could probably start changing their perspective and making myself some money.
Exactly.
So I was like, this is how I started being like the Dr. Dre in my hood. I started doing beats for everybody on the block. So, but it was a rough time because I really wanted my dad to accept me for who I was. And it's rough, you know what I mean? As a teenager, you don't feel like you getting that accolade from your parents, you know what I mean?
And going off the older, younger generation with you and your dad, I know Young Thug, obviously, you describe yourself as kind of an uncle-nephew relationship with Young Thug, and he reached out to you for the song Wycliffe John, and he was describing the Haitian Revolution in 1804 and maybe all the stuff that you weren't expecting him to know about. What was that connection like with you and Thug in the studio, and what was that relationship? How did it come to be when he first reached out and was like, yo, I want to, like, I respect the shit out of you. Like, I want to make this song about you. And
yo, these kids, they know I'm a real gangster.
Mm-hmm.
Like, real G'd up. Like, you ain't never hear Suge Knight smacking Wycliffe Jean. You never hear Suge Knight showing up hanging Wycliffe from a window. I was a Fuji when they was around. You never heard, dude, I ain't had no bodyguard, right? So I was looking up to, I had just a different mentality. So what happens is you can't trick the youth. The youth know the real and the fake. And when we say gangster, we ain't talking about Al Capone style gangster. Mm-hmm. We talking about real gangster. Like, in the sense of, you know, we built paramilitaries. Like, we try to take over countries, that kind. Mm-hmm. So the kids, at the end of the day, the original gang wasn't created to just bang bang. It was created to actually protect communities. So at the end of the so whether if it's like Young Thug, whether if it's like Kodak Black, all these kids, like, they identify with me. There's a lot of things that we have in common, right? Because at the end of the day, I could have been them, right? Because we all come from this space of poverty, dude. It's no joke. It's the idea of, so when Thug is like, yo, I name my projects Haiti, man. That's how much I love Haiti. Like, I wish I was Haitian. He's trying to identify with it because there's something about the Haitian Revolution that he identifies with, because the idea of the Haitian Revolution is you're going to go up against all odds. It's like you're going up against Napoleon, which is the most ruthless army ever known to mankind. At the time, there was equivalent to the Roman army, whatever the Roman army was in their era. Mm-hmm. So the Haitians was like, yo, we're not going to go for that. So there's something about a revolution when a group of people stand up and they're like, we rather you kill us than we bow down to you. And so that was really my connection, like with the youth. So I don't be like singing if I was president. Dudes be like, yo, that dude really tried to become president. Like, that dude is it. So for me, like, I look up to Bob Marley. So if I met Bob Marley, I'd probably say the same things that Thugger said to mm-hmm. me, like to him. You know what I mean? Yeah. So coming from where he came from.
It's like you say, like, you gotta embrace what's in front of you and behind you, both generations, because it's true. The youth keep the beat of the music. They keep the pulse of the music, and they know, yeah. like, what's popping.
Yeah, and they know books.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, whether if we're talking about The Prince by Machiavelli, right? Mm-hmm. So, or whether we talk, it don't really matter. The Celestine Prophecy, Vortex, it don't matter the era. The kids are going to find it, right? And the kids relate to it. And just like, so the author, when he was doing it, like Santana was telling me, Santana was like, yo, we don't live in a time, in a space. Like, we define time and space mm-hmm. because we live eternal. So it's like this. I was saying to people, at the end of the day, whether if I had Grammys or I don't have Grammys, it don't matter. Whether if they play my music on the radio or they don't, it don't matter. Like, Juve was a successful EP. You quote a line from Hendrix. That shit was never on the radio. Mm-hmm. How do you know it? Because at the end of the day, right, Bob Marley is still Bob Marley. He don't have no Grammys. Music. Bob Marley ain't no Grammys, but he's still Bob Marley. So the thing is, the music will always reach the generation if it's pure, right? And if you do real music, then you eternally, constantly looking for the next. Mm-hmm. So for me, and I be seeing, like, my generation be fighting with kids on Twitter, and because the kids be like, yo, we the best, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, kids would say, yo, I'm the best rapper, I'm better mm-hmm. than Biggie. You know, dude be like, yo, I'm better than, what, are you kidding me? But at the end of the day, remember how we used to boast, and that's what hip hop's about. It's about that boasting. Yo, we in my dressing room, it's like crazy. Yeah, yo, close the door.
People coming in.
Close the
door,
please. Yeah, hectic out here. And ain't even get started.
So you work with an all-female label called Heads Music, and it's a true partnership. It's between artists and management, true partnership in the terms of, like, the creative process. And how does letting women take the reins, empowering women in music, especially it could be such a toxic environment with masculinity in the music industry, how does this label allow you to make that connection with empowering women and tie into your journey and message as a music artist?
Okay, so Lauryn Hill, Beyonce, mm-hmm. Whitney Houston, Mary J. Blige, Shakira, I could go on and on.
Powerhouses.
I got the touch with women, like, right? And what is the touch? The touch is, if you can understand that women just do it different than men, like, at the end of the day, women put the extra touch to it, right? So, like, because we as men, we move a certain ways. There's just naturally things that we're good at. And what they're good at is when they obsess with creating something, mm-hmm. making a statement, and having the world look at them a certain way. It's like my mama at the end of the day. So my mom, when she gonna make a statement, you're gonna hear her statement. I feel like, so with me, I was like, okay, with this partnership with Heads Music and me partnered up with these girls, at the end of the day, they speech to me was simple. Clef, we want you to do the same thing you did for Lauryn Hill, for Shakira, for all these girls, but mm-hmm. we have the next of the generation. Now, for me, this is an easy sell, because at the end of the day, Quincy Jones did Michael Jackson when he was 54. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I'm 48. So at the end of the day, for me, this is an incredible chance to work and develop new talent. Because I always say, for things to move forward, it's like the league, it's like basketball. Can you imagine, like, if we never have a draft and it's like we have to rely on the same players? Mm-hmm. It's like, okay,
you're not getting the new talent.
You're not giving a new talent. So at the end of the day, you can't have a world where it's like you say, Wyclef Jean, Jay-Z, Beyonce, Rihanna. Yeah. Like you only name it like three or four, and you'd be like, oh, biggest pop girls. You can only name a few, and then you'd be like, hold up. So the thing is, I like Head's music because they don't focus on how many views the artist got. Mm-hmm. They ain't focused on, they'll come to you and say, if you have this raw talent, let us help build you a social media. Mm-hmm. Like let us help find you the exposure to see it, but they don't base it on what the labels do now, which is, oh, this person got 100 million views, let's grab them. Mm-hmm. Versus, where's the person who got one view? And they don't give a fuck about no views. They just happen to be in their campus, chilling, doing their music. And when they show up on that grass field, 10,000 people show up to. So I like that idea, because now when Heads can expose that to social media, it becomes the other side. So I think that's what I'm excited about.
In terms of the creative lane, the creative process, I don't think that it's ever been more open for artists to make a name for themselves outside of music, even in film, in other artistic processes. And not a lot of people know that you were nominated for a Golden Globe for Hotel Rwanda.
Now you facts, and I lost to Mick Jagger.
Yeah,
though.
And now you have guys like John Legend and Common that are taking home Oscars, and it's such a huge part of building a brand for yourself. Are you looking to keep going in other lanes with jingles and movies?
Yeah, ain't
and things
nobody
like that?
Yeah. I'm owed two things, man. Mm-hmm. I'm owed a Golden Globe. Still got to get that. You know, I look forward to an Emmy.
Yeah, if you're listening, get Clef that Golden Globe.
You know what I mean?
Ship it to
it
him.
It's beautiful. It don't stop for me, you know? Like you said, you know, my background along with music, it's like I'm a jazz major too. So being a jazz major, I love scoring movies. So we got a lot of big things coming in the future. And I always tell the youth, man, the world is vast. And the music business is vast. It's not just music. It's like you said, acting, doing scoring. You could come up with animation. You know what I mean? And it's beautiful for me because I came up a techie in the sense of equipment. Mm-hmm. And then so for me, like, tech and music just goes together like now, like hand in a glove, which is dope for me. You know what I mean?
Because it lets you get into those other lanes too. And it's
man,
not like you're learning everything over
crazy.
From scratch.
My man just put me up on a new app. It's a looper app. And literally, you can loop your voice. And then another track, you keep looping. Almost
and
like
you just make your own
we used to do in the cafeteria. Yeah. So all of these things, it's like the software is... So now the coding is being created by guys like us, more like guys who understand music and then who understands the pulse of the human, right? Because remember, like coding a long time ago is just engineers. Yeah. So now what happens when you have the music guys that understand the coding, it becomes different.
So you have a lot of guys today that knock music like Young Thug, and they say that people aren't focused on the lyrics. And I think that, and I've heard you say this also, that we're also in like a melody wave, or kind of like the melodies become the dominant force, even though the lyrics are still there too. And you hear people nowadays like Young Thug that have an entirely different musical approach, but their melodies are popping and they're sick. Like you go into the club, like you want to hear this music. It's like an escapism. What do you think of this new melodic wave, this escape wave of music and going off the lyrics? Like, do you agree with people knocking the lyricism, or what's your take on that?
Well, I think that this is why we have classical music, jazz music, bebop, reggae, EDM. I mean, could you imagine it? At the end of the day, every generation will have a wave, right? So, and they'll have a language. So I actually don't think it's not that the kids are saying nothing. I think that the old folks don't understand what the fuck they're saying. It's a new language. It's it's a cryptid to the generation. It's like when we was coming up, we used to talk a certain way. Yo, what up, dog? My daughter don't talk like that. She'd be like, yo, dad, it's Liddy. And I'm like, huh?
It's
like,
lit,
yo, it's
lit.
Liddy. It's lit, you know? And then a rapper is rapping, and if you older, you don't know the lingo, and you hear, Liddy. What are they talking about? So for me, I think that... Why is the music so melodic now? Why do the kids just want to escape? And why do they just want to have fun? Because it's different when we was coming up, right? The tower was still up when we was coming up. You see what I'm saying? Like, we have to turn on the news and every 2 seconds, like,
you're just bombarded.
They're making
with
you
fucked
feel
up
like
shit,
you fucked up. Like, there's really... So the only place that you have some kind of like release where you just feel like, yo, I'm gonna lose it for the night and I don't give a fuck, happens to be the club. So the club now happens to be the safest place of imagination. It's one of the safest places of imagination where you could go lose yourself, because you no longer want to watch TV because you don't lose yourself. This is why Netflix does so good, because at the end of the day, you rather watch something that has nothing to do with nothing than opposed to, you want to watch something that has to do with creativity of the human opposed to a government structure telling you this is what you should see today. You know what I mean?
And going off that melodic wave, I know you sampled sounds from Jupiter for Borrowed Time for part of the Behind the Melody, and that was part of the instrumental. And I was reading that you went into a room with scientists from NASA because Apple Music hit you up and said, like, yo, they have this this spaceship that records sounds from Jupiter. And you smoked an L right before, and you went into this room and you were just hearing all this crazy shit, these actual sounds from the planet of Jupiter. Like, what was going through your mind when you're just in that room, like high as fuck, just listening to these sounds and trying to maybe think of a way to use them on a record?
I mean, just thought of Einstein, man, the law of relativity, you dig? Like, how to make this thing work, right? Because you could see it. So for me, I believe we as humans are particles, the best carbon created. And one of the best parts to us as humans is vibration. And vibration is a vibe. And the idea of where do we go? Like, so after the physical dismiss itself, this spunky thing that's speaking to you, like, where does that thing go? So there's a part of space where I think a lot of times they want us to disregard as humans. And I think it's a real part of it. So for me, when I heard the sounds in Jupiter and then I could put a piano behind it or a keyboard, it was no difference then. So we, you know, we use native instruments, right? And we go up there, we use the Logic and we use Kontakt and all of this. And we constantly, as producers, are looking for sonics. Like, let's put a wind behind this. Let's put, you know, when we muffle this keyboard sound, is there some kind of drone that could come into it? So it was incredible to hear a lot of, like, what's going on in Jupiter and be able to sample a lot of that frequency. You know what I mean? Man, I could just tell y'all, the crazy thing was, like, there was like, yo, some stuff you gonna hear you can't really like talk about. You feel me?
Yeah.
Cause some of the sounds just sounded like it sounded like it was more than just sound. It sounded like life. You
like
feel
someone
what I'm saying
was like talking back to you.
Almost. Yeah, because we understand it, right? Cause when we on Earth and the ocean, which has a lot of mystery, you know what I mean? Like the calls of the dolphins, like there's a way that dolphins can hear things. There's a way horses hear things. There's a way that animals feel things before we feel them as humans, right? And we on Earth. So why should we ever disregard that with space?
Yeah.
So that was the whole thing. It was an experience and a half.
And dope music is dope music. It doesn't matter if
facts,
it's coming from Earth,
if it's dope.
It's coming from Jupiter or Mars, like wherever the fuck it's coming from.
Beethoven for real.
Yeah, the classical EDM, rap, hip hop. And you made the song Divine Sorrow with Avicii. And a lot of people wouldn't put you and Avicii together if you're going to collaborate on a song like Wyclef and Avicii. Like, oh, I don't know. And it ends up being this fucking unbelievable song. And I know you went to Stockholm and you were in Tim's studio. Yeah. What was that environment like watching him put together the beat and you producing and laying down the lyrics for the track just in that studio in Stockholm with Tim Bergling, getting to watch each other work?
Well, I mean, I was going to Stockholm when Tim was a baby. So Tim been a Fuji fan since he been like little kid, like 12. And he been a Wyclef fan.
So you were
Tim,
his idol.
Tim knew more Wyclef songs than Wyclef. And so what happens is, right, so whether if we talking about EDM or hip hop, when we all get together, we just musicians, right? So at the end of the day, to the public might be like, oh, we could never pair an EDM artist with a Fuji artist. Mm-hmm. And what happens when we put it together? But what I want the crowd to know is that EDM artist was listening to Mary J. Blige.
Yeah.
You know, they was listening to like Icky Mouse. They was listening to King Yellow, man. They was listening to the Fugees. How the hell you think they came up with the EDM shit? It's because of the idea of, for me, like EDM, true EDM, when it's put together, it's like putting classical music together. Mm-hmm. It's like a whole nother way. So for me, getting together with Tim was dope because it was an experience for like both worlds. It was like what happens when the hardware meets the software. So a producer is who's coming from the era where we have to pick up the guitar, we got to walk with the hardware, and a kid shows up with his computer and he's like, oh, what kind of guitar is that, Teller? And just types in Teller, and the sound of the Teller comes out, right? So it's incredible, because what I loved about the session was every time Tim couldn't get something from the computer, he'd be like, yo, Clef, give me that Clefication shit, right? Because no matter how dope the computer is, it can't copy the human. You know what I mean? So, but I think the best performance is when the human meets the machine. Like with the right algorithm, is basically over. And I think that's what, like, you know, with me and Tim, like when I was doing that shit, he was like, oh, Clef doing EDM. I'm like, are y'all out of y'all mind? Y'all ain't hear the Carnival? My first album, I'm doing everything. Like, I'm not that kid in the box. I'm like African Bambaataa, baby. So when I got with Tim, I was excited because I wanted to learn the style, right? Because it was a whole new thing. Wanted to understand it. And guess what? That's like one of my like highest streamings is the me and Tim record. It's like crazy streaming, and no one would have expected
that. Yeah, that shit popped off, and I don't know what it's at now, but it's in the tens of millions.
Yeah, man, facts.
And you had Human Meets Machine for Divine Sorrow. For Carnival 3, you describe it as 1997 meets 2017. Mm-hmm. And you have the trap sonic, you have the acoustic sonic, you have electronic elements, hip hop. And you're constantly embracing, like we were saying before, what's in front of you and behind you, seeing the studio making this, and you have your daughter rapping Migos at home. You have all these different influences combining what's in front and behind. How will this album and this tour bring together people all the way from 13 years old to 56 years old? Because not many artists can bring together people that are 40 years apart, and you're doing that.
Yeah, I think the way it happens is a true love for the music and learning it, right? So I'll give you an example. My last, after the album, I put out a mixtape called Inspired.
Mm-hmm.
And with the mixtape, what was I doing? Because you can't just tell a kid, oh man, I respect your genre. Like, you know, I understand it. They don't know what the fuck you're talking about. But now when you hear me barring up Kendrick Lamar DNA and put my own words, when you hear me barring up ASAP, you know, ASAP Ferg, when you hear me like, you know, barring up Kodak Black, then the kid just has a different response. They're like, oh shit, this dude can bar up. Now they're not even looking at what era you from, because if you nice, you nice. And but nice don't mean you saying it in theory. You gotta prove it to them. It's like, or you can't be like, I can cross on you in basketball. You just saying
you
a
gotta,
word.
You gotta do it. You gotta cross that shit on up.
Yeah.
So I figured a good way, bless you. I figured a good way to end off the podcast. I heard that when you were running for president of Haiti, you had two laptops. You had one that you'd have your policy on, trying to study, and then you'd have another with battle rap lyrics and stuff like that. And you say you always have 16 bars on you, ready to go. Is that your guitar right there?
Yeah, you know what? I got a scheme for y'all. I just wrote this one.
Yeah, a scheme for
this is brand new. I got a scheme for you. So I just wrote this and I think I'm gonna bust this scheme. So this scheme is called 21.
It's called 21.
I just did it for my boys, right? So everybody that's listening right here, what I want y'all to do is every time I count a number and put it back, you're gonna put it in your head. And then I ain't gonna stop till I get to 21. Now, this is the new scheme that I got with my boy. So,
all right.
Y'all, you ready, man?
Let's do it.
All right, pay attention.
Let's
hope
do
you,
it.
I hope
Let's
you
go.
I hope you pretty like spaced out on this one. Here we go. Now I'm the one. I know what you're thinking. Me too. But in this game of numbers, they could only be a few. See, I'm one plus two. Now, what's the riddle, kid? I'm one man on two sticks. What's that?
Three.
The crucifix. At least that's what they told me in Sunday school. Forgive my foes. But four fives pointed at Pinocchio's nose. I got the sixth sense. Go to lucky seven. That's the number of completion. Adam ate the apple, so they cast him from the Garden of Eden. Jealousy got him waving his nine. Can't kill Abel. Now let's take it back to the one, but add a zero. That's 10. Two ones ain't enough to make it rain. Microphone check, 1-2, hip hop lives in my vein. I'm from the era niggas scrap with their hands. Play Friday the 13th, get Cobra clutch, nigga, or body slam. But kids don't use their hands no more. It's M14s and M15s. Guns, roses at your sweet 16. See, I was born on October 17. That's the day them niggas killed our leader, Jean-Jacques Dessalines. Monsters, they live under the bed. They 18s. So in the 19th hour, think Malcolm X by any means. 2020 vision, they say the good die young. So I had to trick death. That's how I made it past 21.
Oh, shit.
Barred up, baby.
You heard it here first. That's 21 first bars, time. Baby. You first time right here. Right here.
Play that back and study
play,
it, baby.
Play it back, baby. Thank you so much for listening to this episode and this conversation with Wyclef Jean. And for anyone who subscribed, rated, or commented on this podcast, I fucking love you. It helps so much to get the word out. It helps so much for people to discover us. When you rate us, when you comment, when you subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, wherever you're listening to this podcast in podcast land, it makes such a big difference for people to find out about us. So thank you so much. I really do appreciate it. I'd love to hear your feedback on the podcast. You can hit me up at zach@auxoro.com, AUXORO, and you can follow us at Auxoro Mag on Twitter and Facebook and at Auxoro on Insta. And you can also go to our main website, auxoro.com, where we have written content, written articles, videos, linked to the podcast. It's basically our main hub where we source all of the content that we put out on every music artist that we cover. This episode was mixed and mastered by Matt Grossfeld, and the music was produced by David Grossfeld. Yes, all three of us are brothers, and no, I did not force them to help me make this episode for free. I pay them $1 an episode. I still owe them for the last one, haven't paid them for this one, but don't worry guys, it's coming, I swear, maybe. And thank you to Wyclef Jean and his management team at Heads Music for setting this up. No interview that I do would be possible without the coordination of the management team. They set up the location, the time, make sure everything's good with us. They basically make sure the whole interview experience runs as smoothly as possible for everyone. So thank you for Wyclef's representation at Heads Music. Thank you, Wyclef, for taking the time to sit down with us. And thank you for the chicken wings and the mac and cheese, because I don't know where you guys got that from, but Wyclef and his boys brought in mac and cheese and chicken wings after the interview was over, before the show, and it was fucking delicious. So thank you so much for feeding us, and I hope to hear from you. Like I said, you can hit me up at zach@auxoro.com, and I'll see you next time.